This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Ben Holderness.
We host the Holderness Family Podcast every Tuesday.
You may know us from the silly videos that we make online.
Or a book about marriage called Everybody Fights.
Or as winners of season 33 of The Amazing Race.
Still can't believe that happened. Yeah. Listen, we do a lot of stuff, but our podcast is our most favorite thing.
Yeah, because every week we get to sit down face to face, talk to each other about marriage, family, mental health, or just anything that we want to know more about.
Sometimes we have expert interviews, sometimes it's just us, but our goal is to bring some joy and laughter and to your life every week.
Our other goal is that maybe you will learn something as well.
Right. So search the Holderness Family Podcast and check out our most recent episodes. We have one about staying organized with creators of The Home Edit.
And one about being diagnosed with ADHD as an adult.
We hope you'll join us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, it's Dave here. This is my wife, Kathy.
Hello.
This is the Cinemile, the podcast where we used to walk home from the movies. Now we walk around absent-mindedly talking about films that came out a year ago, but were due to come out several years ago. So we actually, believe it or not, we recorded this episode, this review of The New Mutants 3 years ago, but we've kept delaying the release of it along with the film.
We were like... Initially, we want to do a podcast episode. What are we going to watch? Oh, look, The New Mutants is out to rent now. That movie that was supposed to be out in the cinema years ago. Dave, are you going to give us like a brief? No, do you know what? Because I don't know when. I literally don't know anything about it. Only that Dave told me it should have been out years ago. So let's just watch the movie, and then when we come back, I presume it's going to be wonderful, and then you can tell me all about its checkered history. What do you think?
Okay, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm curious to hear from you guys if any of you have went to see this, because it did get a cinematic release when cinemas were briefly open here in the UK back, I think, in August a few months ago.
Oh, wow, interesting.
So it was screened in cinemas.
So we could have gone to this instead of maybe like Tenet. It would be up there, right?
yeah. It was around that time, I think. Okay, well, let's leave it there. So we are going to go...
So it's like, what? It's an X-Men movie.
Yeah, it's a... Yes, it is in the X-Men universe. It was made by 20th Century Fox, but pre the Disney acquisition of 20th Century Fox, which I'll go into in some detail in the troubled backstory section of this podcast. Okay. But I'm actually quite... I think it's been a much maligned film. I don't think it received very positive critical reaction, but I'm a big fan of the X-Men stuff and superheroes, so I'm going to keep an open mind.
And it seems like a good cast. So it's Anya Taylor-Joy from Queen's Gambit.
Hot off the Queen's... Yeah. Oh, no. Hot years before the Queen's Gambit.
Maisie Williams.
Your man from Stranger Things.
Which one from Stranger Things?
Your man, the Nancy's boyfriend, the... brother, the older brother,
the older
of Mike.
From Stranger Things. Wow,
who knows what his name
is? This is a few years old because he. I guess he was probably really hot.
He was hot property
hot
in 2017
one, yeah.
When they shot.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so here we go. So see you guys in a little bit when we've watched The New Mutants. Bye.
Bye.
You're not alone. Not anymore. Do you know what mutants are? Would anyone like to share their first time? Rain?
I was 13. I thought it was a dream. I just lost control.
Sam?
I started panicking. People got hurt.
Roberto?
My girlfriend had burned her.
Ileana?
I killed 18 men, one by one. It's a cage.
It's important we find out your power so we can help you get better.
I saw something I don't think she wanted me to see.
I don't think we're here to get better.
Hi, we're back. We watched the New Mutants, but before we talk about that, quick shout out to some of you lovely listeners who have joined the Cinemile High Club, our Patreon exclusive podcast where we chat about old movies and new TV shows. So a big thank you and welcome to Matthew Wallace Wells, Chris Attaway, who is a fellow Married at First Sight Australia fan, we've discovered. Alexander Sykes, former work colleague. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Wen, Aisling Cunningham, and your sister joined, Jackie Cullen.
Or as she's called in France where she lives,
Jackie Coulon. Who I believe Coulon featured recently on the Cinemile High Club.
She did.
Talking about Bridgerton.
She did.
If you would like to join them in their ranks, you can join at patreon.com/thecinemile. It costs £2 or £3 a month and you get access to all loads of more than 20 movie old movie reviews instantly that you guys get to choose, and TV reviews.
Thanks, guys. And New Mutants. Well, firstly, not very long. Huge plus.
What a lovely, lovely running time.
85 minutes?
Less than 90.
Could
feature on the 90-minute film festival podcast, yeah. Sam.
But, crucially for me, it ain't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
And it's not bad. It's
better
fine
than a movie I saw in the cinema that you didn't see, the rebooted Fantastic Four.
Oh, yeah.
It's much better
I've
than that.
I've never seen that. It was supposed to be dreadful,
because
right?
That was my benchmark. Mentally I was thinking, it's going to be worse than that or what, because I knowing nothing about this movie and having not even seen a trailer for it, but knowing that there was rumblings and issues in the background of it, no, it's not as bad, it really isn't. In fact, like, it doesn't feel very cinematic, I will say that. What it felt like to me was like maybe a 3-part teen TV drama.
Yeah, it feels like this would have made a better TV
show.
Yeah,
it felt like a mini series that's made for TV about teenagers that was kind of edited poorly into a movie. And as you're watching the movie, there's moments where I think this could be really good, but like the edit is just a mess. But I enjoyed all the characters. There's 5 teenagers and they are new mutants, as the title would say, and they're kind of newly coming into their powers and learning how to navigate them, whatever. And they're in like kind
but
of
they're
a
in a mysterious
setting
facility.
It kind of reminded me also of Glass, that movie in the Split.
It does have vibes of Glass,
and she's in Glass, Anya Taylor-Joy.
This is better than Glass though, for my money.
It's in the same vein. If you like think of Glass and like the Fantastic Four and like some form of an X-Men movie, it's in that vein. It very much felt like a tween movie to me though. It didn't really feel like a movie for adults.
It's got a young adult vibe.
Yeah, but honestly, sure. I really didn't think it was bad, but now if I'd gone to see it in the cinema, I wouldn't have been overly happy that I spent money on it. You know, we paid to rent it there a couple of pounds, but like
£3 at home, 90 minutes, doesn't outstay its welcome. I thought it was totally fine.
It's totally fine, but like,
sorry, somebody's cutting the grass. Oh no, it's a motorbike.
He's this guy who lives near us.
No, this is a recording studio.
I actually really admire this
whole street.
Guy. He lives near us, and he spends upwards of, I'd say, 5 hours a day cleaning his motorbike.
This is a podcast, so you can't see what I'm saying, but it is polished, man.
It's unbelievable.
It's a polished wheels.
Anyway, so yeah, they're my thoughts on the movie, really, and I don't know very much else.
Well, thanks
to say
for listening
about
to the Cinemile. That's been our review of the New Mutants.
It's grand.
I don't know how much else I can add. Well, we will do spoilers of this in a bit, by the way.
I did enjoy Maisie Williams as a dog. That was funny.
Yeah.
Her mutant power is to be a dog and to turn into a dog with like a weird mullet that kind of grows out as you're turning into a dog.
She's very Teen Wolf.
Which kind of reminded me of our toddler Oscar's current hairstyle, because we're in lockdown and he can't get a haircut and he won't let me cut it, so it's just full mullet.
It does look a bit like that. I will say, like, this movie is fine. It could have, like, you can see a better movie in here, and I'm not quite, you put it really well while we were watching it. You said, do you ever watch a movie and you like can't figure out why it's not working?
Yeah,
and
that's what I kept thinking with that.
Have the same thing. Like, I was watching it being like, this isn't gelling. Like, nothing's really fitting together here, even though it should.
But the setting's cool. The characters are pretty cool. They're good actors.
But it's not. There's no spark. There's no life. Yeah. And there's no chemistry. So I think those are the things that it's the unseen things you cannot plan for. Are just not present in this movie. There is no life to it. And it's funny because I'll get to the sort of background production of this in a minute, because it is very interesting how this all came about. But it was pitched as nominally being like Stephen King meets The Breakfast Club, which actually sounds quite cool, set in the X-Men universe.
I can see where they're going with that. I can.
And you can see the elements of that. Even Breakfast Club is an easy one to call to mind while you're watching this, but it's also an unfortunate comparison point because you're like,
This ain't no Breakfast Club.
This is the problem.
But the characters in this one, you never get to know them well enough like you do in The Breakfast Club. Like, you kind of just arrive in the characters and you meet them very briefly and you see some interactions with them, but it's like, you don't get under their skin at all. Like, the closest
I've exactly
felt, the two leading ladies, Maisie Williams and then the main actress whose name I can't remember, I felt like I kind of knew them, but even then it's very tangential. Like,
they're the only ones who are given anything interesting to do, and, yeah, and anything that furthers their sort of plot development. The rest of them are all just have backstories.
The other thing that's exactly like is The Runaways, which was a Marvel TV series that we really liked and we watched season one of. And there's to the point where one of the guys in this just looks exactly like the guy from The Runaway and appeared, I think, had very similar skills to him, though I can't quite remember. Like, it's just so derivative, and it's interesting that it was even pitched as Stephen King meets The Breakfast Club, because it's like, it has to, within the X-Men universe, it has to be pitched as inspired by multiple things we already know, because it's so completely unoriginal.
Yeah, and exactly, and that the problem is it just reminds you of things that are better than it.
Because there's some scary creature design. Like, there was one monster called, like,
yeah, we'll
smiley.
Talk about it in the spoilers. Yeah. People might... not want to be spoiled.
But one of the creature designs, I was like, this is a really scary creature, but like, I feel no fear.
Yes, okay. Well, a lot of what you're describing can be explicitly explained by the production history of this movie.
Okay, give us the history.
So, which is very interesting.
It's funny that, like, I remember last year when it came out, like, you and lots of other people were tweeting, like, oh, this is what age they were all when it was filmed, and this is the age now. It's like, so what? There was.
It became
years.
A joke. It became a punchline because it was delayed several times over the course of 2 years. Actually, it actually came out 2.5 years after its original release date, which isn't the longest time, but in the movie land, it's pretty.
But partially, like, the age that the characters are, and like casting young actors is like, they've aged out of it now. Like,
well, they did have it. They have it. They. I'll explain that did factor into it, their age. At one stage, they were going to do reshoots towards the end of 2020, but they decided that they didn't look the same anymore. So it just wouldn't really work.
It's just Anya Taylor-Joy with like her short red, like Queen's Gambit hair.
I think it would have been noticeable. Which was one of the things, funnily enough, that you mentioned Josh Trank's Fantastic Four. Because they did reshoots.
Oh, they were bad.
And your one didn't have the same hair, right? So the wig is quite a funny thing.
What's her
thing
name? Not Zooey Deschanel, but was it her sister?
She's a Rooney Mara.
No, sorry, Rooney Mara's sister.
Rooney Mara's sister.
Kate Mara. Kate Mara, yeah. Me, Jackie, actually, who's our new patron, and Mom sat in the cinema and laughed her heads off at it because it was like, oh, there's the wig. Oh, the wig's gone again. Oh, there's the wig. The wig's gone again.
So we were kind of looking for something similar in this movie. Like, where's the reshoots? But here's the interesting thing. Reshoots were planned several times, but they also kept getting delayed and they never happened. So there are no reshoots in this movie.
So why is it such a mess and why was it delayed then?
Right, let me tell you. So
it's not even a mess. It's not like Artemis Fowl bad. It's just, you know,
oh,
something's
no, it's
wrong
not
with it.
Nowhere near as bad as that movie. This is just, and it's fine. Honestly, I was
just, it's
quite,
very
was,
oddly short it, for a movie of like in this universe.
You can tell there's not much to it. But honestly, I thought it was fine. I thought it like, I didn't hate it. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
It is a coherent piece of
but come on, production
work that has some merit. Yeah. But like, I it's nothing to recommend or get excited about. It really isn't. Right, so I'll start with sort of the promise of this movie is quite something, and I really honestly feel bad for the writer director Josh Boone who brought this to life. Because this sounds like a passion project, and I don't think he is responsible for any of the twists and turns that happened over the past few years in this film. So I genuinely do feel bad for him that that this is where he got to. But he directed The Fault in Our Stars.
Oh wow, that's huge!
In 2014.
Oh my God, I watched that on a plane once, and I like I nearly got sick. I was crying so much.
So he's got the YA credentials, right?
And he's certainly capable of drawing out emotions. No, there's none in this movie.
Exactly. But, so that's what's interesting. So he pitches to this movie to Simon Kinberg, who is the has been involved in the X-Men franchise with 20th Century Fox since the very beginning, and directed as a producer mostly, but directed the ill-fated Dark Phoenix thing that we saw last year. So he pitches it, him. So he goes off. Josh Boone.
By last year, you mean 2019, right? Because 2020, we didn't see anything.
Josh Boone goes off with his childhood best friend Nate Lee, and the two of them create an actual comic book of based on the New Mutants was an actual comic book property that they loved as children, and they wanted it to turn into a potential trilogy. So they actually made a comic book, which was their which their pitch to Simon Kinberg, which is very cool.
That's cool.
And so there's like almost like storyboards of what the comic of what the trilogy would be in comic book form. So
you
like
can totally tell this when absolutely. The movie ended, they thought there was going to be another movie.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. But the first of all, that's an awesome thing to do. That's an awesome job interview pitch. He loved it. He described it, Simon Kinberg described it as really dark, interesting, and different from the typical X-Men stories that we had read. I said they kind of pitched it as Stephen King mixed with The Breakfast Club, which is kind of interesting. It also, here's this, an interesting stuff. The first draft was supposed to heavily include Professor X with James McAvoy. It was set in the 80s, and it was also said to have Alexandra Shipp, who was to reprise her role of Storm from X-Men Apocalypse. So this is right after the third X-Men movie with the new cast, X-Men Apocalypse, you know, the one with Oscar Isaac set in the 80s and all that. So this was going to tie directly into that.
But we've watched that movie for this podcast, didn't we, a few years ago?
We did, yeah. It was one of our first ever cinema episodes.
Yeah, I remember that.
But here's where the studio get involved, right? So that was the pitch. Simon Kinberg loved it. It was supposed to be a full-on horror movie. Like,
yeah,
absolute.
There was bits of it where I was like, this could be really scary, yes. But clearly someone's diluted it.
Exactly right. So they start to develop the film. That's what they wanted. That's what everybody wanted. Josh Boone and his friend Lee wanted to make this. But Fox were like, no, they didn't like the... they didn't like full-on horror, right? So they said, right, it's going to be... make it horror, but without any excessive blood or scares.
But isn't that interesting?
And make it more young adult focused.
They allowed Deadpool to be, like, R-rated, and then that was huge.
Oh, you're only at the beginning of the journey here.
Oh, right, okay.
So, the film's principal photography, they shot it all, basically, which Boone described in an interview, Josh Boone, as very stressful because he felt, quote, a bit neutered during the process, due to having to tone down the film from his original full horror ideas, right?
Yeah.
So Fox are like, tone it down. We don't want it to be scary. We want it to be more young adult focused. That's the brief. And
that's bad though, because young adults love scares.
I know, right? But then what happens? The film It comes out in 2017,
starring a different kid from Stranger Things.
Yep. And then the then Fox is like, oh, that film was really popular with teenagers and it was very scary. So they say to Josh Boone,
have they heard of like Friday the 13th or Scream or like Nightmare on Elm Street?
Smacks of stupidity. So they're like, okay, let's make a... So they decide to trial something out, right? So they've got the first cut of The New Mutants, and they say, let's make a trailer for this. And let's ramp up the scary elements. Let's make this look like a crazy-ass, scary, R-rated horror movie in the trailer. And then they put it in... and then they decided to run it, and it was, like, really well-received by audiences. They were like, whoa, that looks amazing. So then Fox...
Did you see that when it first came out?
I don't remember. I must have. So then Fox... go back to Josh Boone, and they're like, okay, we want you to make the original vision. Make a really scary... R-rated horror film. Let's go for it. And
it's
he's like,
you know, you can't get Maisie Williams that easily, like,
I know.
To come back.
So,
she's like in the final season of Game of Thrones.
So to allow this to happen, they pushed the film out a year. It was due to come out in January 2018 to allow him for reshoots. And at one stage, it was looking like they would have to reshoot more than half the film to make it more frightening, right?
Okay.
But what happened then? Deadpool 2 got moved in the slot that it was at, so they had to get moved again. back out to 2019. And then Dark Phoenix gets moved to its slot, so then it gets bumped another 6 months. So that's firstly, that's two reasons it got moved, because of the Fox slate, okay, prioritizing other X-Men movies and Deadpool, right? Then March 2019 comes along and Disney buys Fox. Mm-hmm. And at this stage, they're basically like, suddenly it's all up in the air as to what they're going to do with this, because it's tied into the X-Men series, which Disney are basically going to scrap, because mm-hmm. they're going to tie it into the MCU. So then it gets pushed back to April 3rd, 2020, and then the reshoots were set to take place at the end of 2019. But by this stage, they couldn't get the cast together because they're all committed to various television
series.
They're
all 40.
And they're exactly. And also, in August 2019, it came out that Disney were not very impressed with the cut of The New Mutants, thought it had limited box office potential. Reminder, this is the cut that Fox made him make initially, which was his, horror film without any scares. Anyway, long story short, the reshoots never happen. He comes in under the new Disney management to try and just finish the thing and get it out. And it's due to come out on March 12th, 2020.
Aww.
But then the COVID-19 pandemic happens and Disney get a bit scared, and so they pull all their theatrical releases. And then it was due to be listed. Then it was due to come out like later in May and at some stage. But eventually there was talks of it coming out on Disney Plus as an exclusive, but that probably didn't fit their family friendly vibe, so the poor film just got absolutely just kicked about in between two studio acquisitions, studio executives at Fox not knowing what the hell they wanted, changing their mind halfway through, and then eventually the film just like hobbled into cinemas in August.
It's so interesting because this is the kind of stuff that happens all the time, but it's so notable with this, I think, in particular because of the age of the cast. Like, if it was a movie that was shot a couple of years ago with adult actors, it wouldn't be talked about as much. And also, the fact that they released all those early trailers years ago and kept moving the dates is mad. Like, to have released a full horror trailer for what this is now.
I just wish that this guy had got to make the film he wanted to make.
It sounds like it. Will we go to Spoiler Street and talk some
yeah,
spoilers?
Yeah, yeah, let's yeah. Let's do that. So spoilers now for The New Mutants.
But thank you for all your research on the very, very troubled production.
Yeah, honestly, it's very interesting. And it made me empathise with the... You know, often what happens is... Often people watch a movie, and if they don't like it, then it's like, well, that guy's shit. You know, that's a shit director, or that's a shit writer. And also, by the way, this movie, in the credits, even calls it out. Was made by created 15,000 jobs. Often movies say that in their credits.
Yeah,
this movie created 15,000 jobs. So it's like, it is also a good thing to have a constant reminder that like a movie isn't a director. You know, a director is just in charge of all of these people,
like,
and bringing something to life.
Unless you're like a Martin Scorsese and you have complete control over
but
your
even
product.
Even like think of Quentin Tarantino, who is somebody who is attributed with being a very single auteur vision of his works. You as soon as his long-term editor disappeared off his career, for me, I think they go downhill.
Yeah,
so you've got all these people surrounding people like Martin Scorsese and Quentin Tarantino.
No, but I mean, in terms of unnoticed. Permission from the studio to do what they want.
Oh, like sure, guy, sure, yeah, yeah.
Because he's like newer, he didn't have that. But yeah, it's interesting because throughout the movie, we effectively have the five main kids and then their so-called doctor. And that's it. And I think that's partially why he didn't feel part of the X-Men world to me. Because
there's six people in the whole movie. Yeah, exactly. There's literally nobody else.
No, and that's
there?
Why it didn't feel like...
Except her dad at the beginning, I guess.
Yeah. It didn't feel part of like that X-Men universe to me, because that's a very heavily populated universe. It feels very different. And that's cool for a horror film, because horror films can be really claustrophobic and scary when you don't have very many people. But then when it's not an effective horror film... If I hadn't known the duration up front, because we saw it when we rented it, I kept thinking that they were going to break out and then do something else.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's not very scary or claustrophobic, and then at the end they only break out in the last few minutes, it's kind of like, what am I watching? And I think that's why I felt like a TV show. It just doesn't have the scope or the scale of a movie. Or the tension, it has nothing.
But
it's not cinematic.
But you're bang on the money. If you're good, if like it can be very effective to set something within a very small setting, a creepy setting. This is an actual former hospital. It's also where Martin Scorsese shot Shutter Island.
Oh no way!
So that film is creepy and filled with dread, and that location should be like that. But this had none of that. Right? There was no atmosphere to this film, was there?
But also the cuts to it, it's literally 1 minute. They kept starting these scenes of okay, we're all in therapy now, we're all going to talk. And you're like, okay, we're going to get to know the characters. One person will talk, then it will just cut to the next scene where they're all in the rec room together. And you're where did the therapy session go? I don't know if that's them trying to cut out scary bits or what, but
there's no flow to anything.
Yeah, there's no flow to it.
Then there's
jarring.
The lie detector scene where it's like, okay, now I'll take my turn. And then it's like, nobody asks any questions. And he says, and my father gave me this coal. And it's like, okay, your dad gave you some coal, I guess. And but what's your man? Your man's the cannonball's backstory is he accidentally killed his father. I mean, that's awful.
In a
mind. But I'm like, that's all there is to your whole thing?
No, but what
thing?
About the supposed, like...
Why are you even there?
I don't get the kind of rich asshole guy, right? At the start of the movie,
he has nothing to do.
At the start of the movie, he's an asshole, right? And then we see
then
nothing.
Then he's not an asshole.
And then he isn't. And we're like, sorry, why did he change? And why is he
washing dishes?
Why is he in the kitchen washing dishes all the time? We never get any explanation. So he's cleaning pots and pans and cooking. And it makes no sense. It's just, there's no point even nitpicking all the details of it. But there's so much inconsistency. But I really have to say that I enjoyed, hold on, we move.
I logged in this time. I had 45.
I really enjoyed the main plot between the main girl, who I can't remember her name because I don't recognise the actress, and Maisie Williams. And I really enjoyed that there was the same sex love plot, and I thought they were very sweet.
They were quite sweet, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that was really good. And
I've got her name here. Sorry.
Great. Go on. Dave's IMDb skills are next to none. But yeah, I really enjoyed those two together. I thought they were quite sweet. And I guess that was a little bit of the Fault in Our Stars vibes there, in that I thought he did the romance stuff really well. And I guess that's probably because that remained unchanged around all the other stuff. That was probably a similar plot.
That was probably the only bit I was emotionally invested in anything, when she's about to be killed by the doctor and we're waiting on Wolf Girl to come and save her. And I was just like, yeah, I hope she saves her.
Yeah, I hope she saves her too. But the doctor...
Her name is Blue Hunt, the actress.
Oh, I really liked her. Yeah. But the doctor stuff was a load of stuff must have been cut out with her, because the doctor was just a tool in someone else's plan, but we never met the other person and never found out their plan. So
well,
the doctor was just
the thing,
a tool,
right?
Then.
So that was... So the person... This is why this film might have been a bit more interesting if it did connect to the Fox X-Men cinematic universe.
Because they kept implying she was talking about Professor X, and at one point the boy is the dishwashing boy is going around in a wheelchair, and who do you think, implying he's Professor X and stuff.
Which and they call out the X-Men. They say that that's where they think they're potentially heading. But we find out in a sort of little thing, there's an Essex Corporation logo on her things, which in the Marvel universe is run by an X-Men villain called Mr. Sinister, who was also teased at the end of X-Men Apocalypse. And that film, when that film didn't succeed, they told him to just scrap all the links to that. But at one stage, John Hamm was supposed to play Mr. Sinister in a post-credit sequence. So that would have all been building up to a big X-Men villain, and would have felt like it's laying some groundwork. But here it's just kind of okay,
worth it going. So it's I kind of liked, and I really liked actually the... They think they're being trained to maybe be X-Men, and they're kind of excited about that, and then they find out that they're not. They're being trained to be killers. Yeah. But for where, then send us to that facility and let us see the really awful training they get to be killers, and let us see them break away from that training. There's just nothing. And I think now that you've said that, it should have been a full horror movie, and that's gone, that's what it is. Because when you remove all the horror, which is the whole point of the movie, that there then is no point to this movie.
Well, the thing is, exactly, and it's it was, this was pitched to a studio that had already released Logan and Deadpool, and so knew how to do this.
Yeah.
Right? And it was also seen as something deliberately that was going to be its own tone, set tangential to the X-Men universe.
It could have been really cool alongside Logan, actually, as just two completely different ways of destroying this universe.
And I'm just I just felt, I feel bad that they didn't allow your man to pitch to do what he had pitched. Do you know what I mean? For various reasons. And look, that's how movies get made. Ultimately, they are made by hundreds of people, and decisions are made, and budgets are changed, and release.
It's just like most jobs I've ever been in.
Companies are acquired.
You have a great idea, and by the end of your project, you're like, "This is not what I've been."
Yeah, I know.
Whatsoever. I know. But yeah, no, honestly. But at the end of the day, we have to say the end product very mediocre. But I actually did enjoy watching it, and I think if I was very young, like I'm talking 10. I'd have been all over this movie.
But I will say though,
I shouldn't have probably watched it, but I think that at that age it's very appealing.
Yeah,
you'd think they were very, the characters are very shallow, but you'd think they were very cool. I would have loved at that age to see like a love plot between two girls. I would have enjoyed all of that stuff. And I would have found it scary. It's just for adults, it's like, it's just very surface level.
Exactly. That's a good point though. Maybe this does work on its intended audience.
It's too violent though. You wouldn't let a kid that age watch it.
Yeah.
Like the stuff with that smiley face.
They were scary.
That's the one I was saying, it's really scary.
Yeah, the smiley men.
The smiley men and the idea of Anya Taylor-Joy when she was a little girl cuddling her teddy in bed and these monsters come together. Like, that's awful. That's terrifying. But we just had no emotional connection to it. And she was just like straight out baddie from the beginning. She was so unnuanced as a character, and then she suddenly flips and she's friendly, and again it's like, but why is she flipped? Like, what's happening?
But that's the problem. The character's motivation didn't make sense, and you're right, they were incredibly shallow. But they also felt like they didn't feel authentic as teenagers.
No.
They felt like a man, and that's something that would never have been fixed. Like, if your man Josh Boone had gone back and made his full horror movie, we still would have been left with the problem that these don't feel like teenagers, and they don't feel like teenagers with individual personalities that are gelling and charming.
Yeah.
And it's important to remember that while we credited him with the success of The Fault in Our Stars, that was an adaptation of a book, so the work there was done for him. Because I think it's interesting when you talk about Anya Taylor-Joy's character, whose name is Rasputin, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that at all.
Ileana Rasputin. She felt very much like, to me, what a 50-year-old man would think an edgy teenage girl would be.
But she goes around like, with a puppet on her hand.
Exactly. It's like, ooh, she's quirky, she's got a puppet. But also like, and maybe some of this is in the comics, I'm not familiar with it. But it's like, okay, enter Rasputin. She's edgy.
It's kind of like Harley Quinn light, isn't it?
Oh, it's just like, it's so like, ooh, she spray paints graffiti. And she's got torn stockings. And she's a bit of a mean girl. And I'm just like,
it was Regina George meets Harley Quinn. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Fashion-wise and everything is mad. But we have to go, because I think we've actually given this movie way more of a discourse than it deserves, like, for sure.
It is interesting, though.
It's really interesting.
I had more fun unpicking what went wrong here than I did watching the film, which largely I was rolling my eyes at.
Fair play to them, because this is the kind of like shit movie that sometimes could be 2.5 hours long. So at least it's short, and that was in fairness to that other Fantastic Four movie that was really bad that I saw in the cinema. That was very short as well. It's almost like they're like, cut your losses, like,
yeah,
like don't make this any worse for the audience than it needs to be. And therefore, I didn't mind it.
Yeah, it did not outstay its welcome. It was like it came, but it did its thing, and it left.
This podcast is outstaying its welcome.
But I said to you, it's funny when
I just said this podcast. I know. Is outstaying
one,
its welcome.
One last thought. I went upstairs after this movie. And then came back down, and then I was like, I think I've literally forgotten everything that just happened in the course of that. Like, it left, you know the way sometimes you come out of a movie and it leaves this like powerful like feeling in you, where you're just either like stunned, or it makes you think about the world differently, or often a movie will just rattle around in your head for days and you're thinking about it, and I'm just like,
this
was like a puff of air and it was gone.
Yeah.
There was nothing here. There's not even, you know. Also, some movies are like, we often equate movies to like cuisine. So, you know, you get like, dine out on a steak, and it's like, it's gorgeous and delicious. But then
you mean
a movie,
or like the movie viewing public?
Often people do. But like, and then an Avengers movie is total junk food, but it's like very satisfying. But it doesn't really leave you, you know, very satisfied for long afterwards. But this is like not even a, this is one single peanut. This is, you know, it's
no,
like,
this is a Skittle. You eat one and then you have a massive sugar crash.
Yeah, and you want more.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You want more, but you
don't get any because it is one Skittle.
Anyway,
it is not a bag
Dave,
of Skittles.
Can we end this podcast?
All right, fine.
You're talking about food and Skittles.
Let us know what confectionery you think this movie most relates to at Twitter At Twitter. We are at Twitter.
Yeah, that's our
we got that handle. At the Cinemile on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, wherever you want. If you want to email us an extensive email about your thoughts about the New Mutants, I'd gladly read it and reply. It's thecinemile@gmail.com.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
We can get out of this together.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What do you do when no one else is watching? What do you do that makes you happy for no reason at all? What are you obsessed with? I'm Leslie Arfin, and I'm a writer, but I'm also a dancer, a painter, a vapor, a dollhouse enthusiast, and basically just an overall hobbyist. My podcast, Filling the Void, is all about what other people are fanatically into. We talk about hobbies, even if you don't have one.
Listen to Filling the Void on Tuesdays on the Irios Network and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.